out! Oh, baby, what a play!
This is Jeff Fedotin with Believe in Chiefs on the Believe Network, Kansas City's number one sports podcast network, the only place with a show for every team in KC and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? On this week's show, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio and I recap the Monday night game, Eagles at Chiefs, and also preview the game against the Raiders. But Joe, before we get into these games, you know, it's Thanksgiving week. I'm back in Kansas City. I'm sporting, for those of you who won't be watching the video of this episode, I'm wearing an old Hayes Huddle t-shirt autographed by Jonathan Hayes. And Joe, on Friday, I can't wait for this, and I'll recap it on the pod. Mike Davidson, the Chiefs historian, great guy who's been on our pod before, is taking our family and on a special tour of the Chiefs Hall of Honor. So can't wait for that, Joe.
Yeah, you know, just going on the Mike Davidson thing, we were able to connect again with Mike this past alumni game against the Chargers when Dante Hall went into the Ring of Honor. And, you know, Mike just is a fantastic human being. You know, he's an unbelievable part of the Chiefs community. And his role now as Chiefs historian is just such a great spot for him, because he's such a great storyteller, and he has such great connections with everybody in the organization based on what he did for the organization all those years, and coming over with Marty from Cleveland, and just love seeing him and what he does. He just gives the best tour. So Jeff, you're going to have a blast, so much fun. And, you know, so glad that you're going to have a chance to do that with him. And cause he just, it's just such a great insider's tour.
I can't wait. And I'll break it down for all the listeners here so that you guys all out there could check it out. Now on to the game at hand was kind of the Kelce Bowl. And we were texting a lot about that. Let's talk about this, because Travis Kelce clearly struggled. He had a fumble. He had a drop pass. You know, I personally think that he's just not quite healthy, that he had the back injury, missed week one, and he had the ankle injury against Minnesota. He looked a little gimpy at this game. He left once for the sideline. Joe, do you think that's it? Do you think maybe he had a case of the Argentina blues? Joe, yeah. What's the issue with Travis Kelce?
I mean, look, we were in a no-win situation with the whole Argentina trip, right? Like, because if he played really well, oh, great, he got refreshed. If he didn't play well, it was that. Like, I'm not 100% sure. I'm still sticking by my argument that he, you know, that going on a trip like that in a bye week is not going to affect a guy like Travis Kelce, who's been playing in the league this long. I'm gonna die on that hill, Jeff. Uh-huh. And because I don't think it really was a factor. He does probably have some nagging injuries. I think that's kind of becoming obvious. Look, he's aging. You know, I mean, players, you know, as you get older and you get into the kind of tenure that he's had playing in a position that's as physical as tight end, with blocking and getting hit and getting tackled and diving and doing all the things that a tight end does, receiver, running backs, you know, they just have different kinds of nagging things that will ail them over time that are much more obvious to see than what might happen with an offensive lineman, right? Since that whole world is happening inside of a 7-foot closet, as we like to say. But you know, yeah, I mean, he certainly struggled a little bit with some of the things that happened. I mean, that was a great punch on the fumble. I mean, that was just perfectly timed. Jim Brown, you know, I'm thinking of great football players through the years, Walter Payton, those guys aren't holding on to that ball. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, it was so perfectly timed that, you know, that kind of a punch on a ball, the ball's going to come out. He couldn't have hit it any more square. I mean, if that was a heavyweight boxing match, that would have been a knockout punch. I'm not that worried about that part of it. You know, the drop ball, I mean, look, everybody was dropping balls in that game. And I think it really, you know, this game comes down to a couple of things, right? It comes down to the fact that the Chiefs and Eagles, their big plays were very mirrored. That was a mirror image of those two teams. When you look at statistically what happened out on the field, it was like a mirror image. You know, Jalen Hurts throwing that weird interception, Patrick throwing that weird interception. You know, I thought Isaiah Pacheco and
both under 200 passing yards, Joe. And I thought that mirroring is so right. Swift and Pacheco had kind of similar numbers. I think you're really on to something.
Yeah. And you know, the only thing that the Chiefs had on the Eagles, I think, was the sacks. I mean, they really did a great job of getting to Jalen Hurts. And the Eagles just really, the Chiefs offensive line was fantastic. They just really, Patrick had plenty of time. But, I mean, you look at everything. Here's my take on the whole thing, Jeff. The impactful plays that the Eagles made seem to have been happening at a better time. Whether it was, I don't know what it was, but like DeAndre Swift's big runs. Isaiah Pacheco had almost just as many big type runs.
Right.
Very, you know, Justin Watson had that huge catch on the sideline, just like Devonta Adams had on the or Devonta Smith had on the on the sorry, I get all my Devonta and the Smiths and the and the Raiders.
From one Devonta to another with Eagles to Raiders. Understand?
And we got the Raiders coming up, so I got that on my mind. Yeah. But like that catch that he had was very similar to Justin's. It just seemed like the Eagles' big plays, the big yardage gains, were happening at a much more impactful time in the game than when the Chiefs had them. Even though the Chiefs were having the same type, it was so bizarre.
The errors for the Chiefs also happened at more impactful times. You know, they had their two turnovers, one in the end zone and one and they were very close to the end zone. So it's, you're absolutely right that just kind of where they happened on the field, when they happened on the field.
It was just – so really it comes down to that. And Jeff, I hate to say this, and you know me, I've never been a very critical commentator, you know, podcaster or whatever, and giving my opinions. I mean, and I still don't mean any critic. I'm not being critical about it, but the Chiefs have an issue at wide receiver, and I love all of them. You know how I feel about Justin Watson. We're alma mater buddies, and you know he's playing, you know, really well for his role and the things that he's doing, and not having been a super high draft pick and coming out of a monster football school. And it's just, it's, but in all honesty, you know, and I'm going to just say this, I have to give Justin a lot of credit, not just being a Penn Quakers homer and a Chiefs homer, but, and just because I love the kid, I think he's a fantastic human being. Like what he said about MVS was amazing. Like he's like, look, MVS makes that catch 99 out of 100 times. So kind of like in a way, like he didn't say it, come out and say this, but he's like, get off his back. Like, you know, he's a great receiver. Like, I just love that about this team. And that's what's going to propel this team, like the way they handled this loss. But okay, back to the point at hand. Jeff, we've got an issue at wide receiver. I mean, we just don't have, you know, I went through yesterday, you know, I was just doing some research and things, and I was looking at, you know, when you start talking about the top wide receivers in the NFL, and you start going through the names today, it's just, you know, we just don't have a Justin Jefferson or a Tyreek Hill, or to use get mixing my metaphors again, a Devonta Adams or an AJ Brown or a Stephon Diggs. Like, we just don't have that receiver. You know, you give Travis all the credit in the world for being the best, if not the best tight end, one of the best tight ends of the century. You know, it just, he's not a receiver. He's not Justin Jefferson. He's not AJ Brown, you know? And I think that is just the secret sauce that these other teams have offensively, that if Patrick had somebody like that to, number one, take the pressure off of the running game, to take the pressure off of Travis, and ultimately take the pressure off of Patrick Mahomes, I think this team would be, they'd probably be undefeated. I really think they would be. Because if you throw an A.J. Brown into that game, and I know AJ, people are always like, oh, A.J. Brown didn't even do anything against the Chiefs. That's because Spagnuolo had an unbelievable game plan for him. I mean, they just, you know, the Chiefs had an incredible game plan for stopping A.J. Brown. And what did that do? It, you know, it opened things up for Devonta Smith. So we just don't have that right now. And with all credit to the receiving core that we have, and again, not being critical, it's a wide receiver room of B to B plus receivers. They just are missing that A receiver to give them that extra dimension. And that's, I think that's it. Every team has that. Every team has that. It's not like the Chiefs are unique, right? Because I think Isaiah Pacheco has really fit a need. Is he the best running back in the league? Absolutely not. But is he fitting the need? Absolutely, for where they got him and what he brings to the offense. So, you know, he complements that offensive line really well. So, I mean, I know that was a lot and I went in a lot of circles, but that's how that game made me feel.
Yeah.
That game made me feel like, what's going on here? Like, you know, obviously living here in Philadelphia, I live with a lot of Eagles fans, Chiefs fans, everybody's kind of in a mix of like, you know, this whole, like, who do you want to win and all this stuff, right? Cause we're in that realm. I tell you, a lot of the Eagles fans that I watched the game with were like, how did the Eagles win that game? Like, what just happened? Like, right. did we just win? Like, did the Eagles win?
Eagles players themselves, you know, Jason Kelce and Jalen Hurst, you know, they were like, we didn't play our best game. You know, we're happy with the win, but there's a lot to work on. Joe, to piggyback on a couple of your points, because you made some great ones there. Yeah, we love Justin Watson on this show. You mentioned how he's a friend of yours. He's a friend of the pod. You're close with his family. I love what he said, being such a stand-up guy. And he's grinding it out there, even with like an elbow injury that I'm sure is not healed. He is such a key component of this team. When you compare, you know, he had 11 targets, and he's a good player. But like right now, he is their Stephon Diggs, Justin Jefferson. And that's a problem. You want Justin Watson on your team, but more as, you know, like a fourth receiver, not your number one. And that's not on him. That's on the composition.
That's just, and you know, I'm sure Justin, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I'm sure he'd be the first person to admit it that he's not AJ Brown. Like but you look at the stats, my God, Jeff, it was like, and I know stats don't paint the whole picture, and you know, stats are stats, but you know, I mean, Chiefs win 7 more first downs, 100 more yards offensively, 50 plus yards more rushing, 60 more yards passing, same interceptions, conversion rate, 47% on third down for the Chiefs, 27 for the Eagles, same amount of penalties. The fumble, the lost fumble, that was big. They have, you know, the Eagles held on to the ball. And then the 5 sacks for the Chiefs and 1 sack for the Eagles. You're like, how did the Chiefs lose this game? And again, it comes down to number one, the fumble. And it comes down to the fact that those somewhere within all of those statistics, plays were happening in a better spot for the Eagles than they were for the Chiefs. So what does that tell me? It tells me that the Chiefs just lost to the best team in the NFC. And now ultimately, I don't know how there's a doubt to say that the Eagles are not the best team in the NFL, just based on the fact that 100%. They beat the Chiefs. They're 9-1. Like, 100%. They're the best team in the NFL. Come on, I don't want to hear any more about the 49ers or any of that stuff. The Eagles are the best team in the NFL. And the Chiefs really should have won that game. I mean, you take away, and again, this is all that I'm usually critical of people who go down this route. Like, well, if you take away the interception, if you take away Travis's fumble, if, like, what was the old saying, the one famous coach, if ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas, right? Right. But let's play the commentary game, right? Like, we get to do that as armchair quarterbacks here. Like, you know, 3 points out of the Travis Kelce fumble, 3 points out of the pick in the end zone, the one that was targeted for Justin, right? Patrick's only interception. There's 6 more points. The catch by MVS, right? I know it's a big if. It's a big, big if, but he catches that. That's another 7, right? Let's pretend they miss the extra point, right? Give them that benefit of the doubt. Now you're talking about 12. Jeff, you're talking about 12 more points.
Yeah.
Now it's 29-21, and it's a different game. I mean, so anyway, Chiefs fans need to take heart. Eagles fans need to be excited about the win. You should hear the fans here in Philly, Jeff. They're like, oh, man, what a terrible win. And I want to be like, guys, you won. Like, stop.
Right. That's like, neither fan base is happy. Both should be. The Chiefs are still 7-3. Looking at their schedule, which I will probably touch on a little bit later, they still have a great chance at the 1 seed. And Eagles fans, it was an ugly win, but you won. That says something when you can win ugly against a really tough team
at Arrowhead. So against the Chiefs. So come on, like, everybody's got to take heart of this game. And I think, I mean, at the whole time I'm watching that game unfold, Jeff, I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching a Super Bowl matchup here. I'm watching a rematch. Like, I just, you know, look, is that being Pollyanna optimistic? Probably, because it's a long rest of the season and it's a long, I mean, it's long playoffs. I mean, you got a long way to go here, but I mean, come on paper though, right? There's no reason why these two teams shouldn't be playing in the Super Bowl, especially when you say, looking at the rest of the Chiefs schedule. I mean, a schedule that I was really, really scared about 6 months ago, 3-4 months ago, even like 2 months ago, you know, coming down the stretch with Buffalo, Cincinnati, finishing the season with San Diego. Oh, I still call them San Diego, LA Chargers. I mean, but like, wow, like, holy cow. Like I was thinking, whew, you know, because my prediction for the Chiefs that they were going to go 14-3. When I go back to my stats that I keep, you know, and by the way, I was awfully, awfully close on, I predicted a 24-21 game against the Eagles. So, you know, I still think the Chiefs, I still think they can go 14-3. I really do.
Their schedule definitely softens with the holiday season upon us. And Joe, the holiday season is off and rolling with the NFL in full stride and the NBA and NHL hitting mid-season form. Bet Online is your number one destination for all your sports wagering info. With up-to-the-minute sports wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions, Bet Online is a top spot for everything pro and amateur sports, and not just the big four. Bet Online has info available at your fingertips with both desktop and mobile access at any time for almost any sport that is played, from MMA to international soccer. Head to Bet Online today and remember to use your promo code BLEAV, Believe, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. Joe, I want to just follow up on something you said, because I'm prepared to die on that same hill too, that I don't think Kelce's struggles are at all because he visited Taylor Swift in Argentina. I don't know if you saw this before the game, because I know you had to work, so you might have missed it, but he like actually crashed the ESPN set. Like he was walking around doing his warm-ups and came off. You might have seen it on social media, but that just shows that he's a guy who like likes to be in the moment. He likes excitement. He's an extroverted guy. I don't think – I'm with you. I think he might be banged up or whatever else. But I don't think that's what's the reason why he's had a little bit of a performance dip. I actually asked him in Germany in the locker room. I said, you know, are you back – you know, you're looking a little healthier. Are you back to your old self? And he kind of joked about, he's like, oh, old self. And he kind of went off on the word old, you know, even though I meant it as a compliment. So maybe he's feeling that. Joe, as somebody who has played tight end yourself in the NFL, especially later in your career, you really were going to be a tight end. I saw something there. They seem to do something interesting, the Chiefs, that I'm sure you saw, that they seem to bring both like tight ends in the backfield and then like kind of then bring them to the line of scrimmage. Did you see that, Joe? I thought that was interesting. And what were they trying to do there?
Yeah. What they're trying to do there, Jeff, is they're trying to disguise the strength, air quote, of the formation, right? Generally 8 times out of 10, depending on the down and distance, the defense is going to call the strength of the formation to where the tight end lines up, right? It's a good way to at least start somewhere if you're on defense, right? So you've got two tackles, two guards, and a center. It's an even line, right? So that doesn't really tell you where the strength of the formation is, right? Like, and when they say strength, it means where are we going to put more bodies? Where are we going to put our big bodies more to that side? Now, again, some of this goes back to historical football when tight ends were, speaking of your awesome T-shirt, the Hayes huddle there, when you had tight ends like Jonathan Hayes, who was really – he was a fifth, sixth lineman, let's be honest. Like, I mean, he'd be the first person to tell you that. And that's the way tight ends used to be. Yeah, they were great pass catchers, but they were also an extension of the offensive line. So what Andy's doing there is, and what Matt Nagy are trying to do, is they're trying to disguise where the strength of the formation is, right? So if you had double tight end, you don't have a strength, right? Because now you've got a balanced line. Then the defense would mark the strength to where there were more wide receivers. So if you had twins or trips receivers out with nobody in the backfield, or maybe where you aligned your running back, or back in the day when we actually had fullbacks in the NFL, like if you aligned your fullback over to the right, like it gives the defense a chance to at least call the strength of the formation so that they can set where they're going to put their weak side players and their open field players, right? So, because usually if you're going to run the ball to the right and you've got a tight end to the right, that makes a little bit more sense. If you're going to run a weak side play away from the tight end, you don't have as many blockers, so you would call that the weak side. So that was a long answer to a short question, but that's generally what you do with the tight ends, and that's what the Chiefs are trying to do. They're trying to keep those linebackers on their toes from where to set the defensive linemen and where to slant the defensive linemen and where to set them up. Because generally, you know, towards the tight end, you're gonna align your defensive tackle more on the outside shoulder of the guard if the tight end is that way, right? Because you don't want to get everybody pinned down with that extra blocker over there. So
that's great stuff there, Joe. This is, I mean, this is what the listeners tuned in for kind of this, the insider X's and O's stuff that you can provide. A couple, just there's so much to unpack about this Eagles game. We will get to the Raiders game. Joe, I thought this was really interesting. Coach Spags during the week, they asked him, how do you stop the tush push? And he said, well, what the key is to keep them in long yardage situation. And they really did that in the first half, third and long. And so they didn't get a chance to do the tush push. Second half, they had a little bit more early down success and were able to do that. We talked about how there was one play, it was a third and one. It was probably more than a third and two in the first half where they should have done the tush push, but didn't. Anyhow, one of the reasons I thought they had success was they started doing more screen passes. And Joe, I'm curious your take on this. I think if I were an opposing offense, I would do more screen passes. The Chiefs have such a good pass rush. They're so aggressive. I think that's what you do when you have a really aggressive pass rush. You go screen, screen, screen. I'm curious if you think that that's something that the Eagles maybe found something there.
Yeah, I mean, and I think one of the things why it didn't completely demolish the Chiefs is their linebacking core.
Yeah,
I mean, they've got such an athletic linebacking core, and you know they've got such athletic defensive ends, right, that can sniff that stuff out. But you're right, that's the perfect, you know, the perfect antidote to an all out pin your ears back pass rush team like the Chiefs. And I think that's something that, you know, offensive coordinators are always looking for, right? They're looking to see that space between, you know, the defensive linemen and the linebackers, right? Especially if you're a defense that likes to drop your linebackers in coverage, especially when you're trying to, you know, bracket a guy like AJ Brown, you know, especially if the Eagles would have had Dallas Goedert healthy, right? Yeah. You're going to need a linebacker to cover him. So that space that happens between the defensive front and the linebackers, if you're, you know, putting some deep threats out there and taking advantage of that space, you know, between 10 to 15 yards from the line of scrimmage, think about it. That's where the screen area is. That's where everybody's going to end up. And that was something the Eagles definitely looked to take advantage of. Why, like I said, just to make a point again, but why that didn't kill the Chiefs is because they have such good linebackers who can close that distance quickly, right? That's the whole key to stopping the screen is once the linebackers see that it's a screen, they have to close that distance fast, and they've got to have the athletic ability to turn on a dime and then go forward after being in coverage. So it's definitely something that I'm a big screen person. I like screens.
I love a good screen. I like to call it out even sometimes.
Yeah. And all the variations now, right? You've got the bubble screen with the running back coming out of the backfield. You've got your traditional let the defensive lineman come at you and then the linemen go out. And, you know, and the Eagles have a great athletic offensive line, especially in Jason Kelce. Like, he gets out and blocks well on screens. Those are more the traditional get the ball out by the numbers, let your three linemen lead the way. Then, you know, one of my favorite things to watch now are these new tunnel screens, you know, where you look at that tunnel that I was talking about between the line of scrimmage and that 10-yard area in the defensive secondary. You got linebackers dropping, right, in coverage, and it opens up what is basically a tunnel. And then you push your linemen out. They don't have to go all the way out and block. Like, they don't have to run 40 yards out to block for the receiver, but they just go straight ahead, and then it creates that tunnel. It's almost like a slant pattern. It's like a glorified slant, right? That these tunnel screens, I'm a big fan of those. I like those a lot. I mean, you see that run in college a lot, you know, with that athletic offensive lineman. It's just the screen variation stuff. And really, it's, you know, all that is, Jeff, all this stuff is it's just an extension of running games.
Yeah,
totally. Right? So when people start saying things like, wow, you know, the NFL doesn't, it's a passing league. Well, if you look at the number of I call them high percentage pass plays, like when you get over a pass percentage of where, you know, it's going to be completed 80 to 90% or even 100% of the time, right? These quick slants, bubble screens, tunnel screens, normal screens, like those are really running plays. So you got to like add those back into the rushing attempts, in my opinion, in my mind, just because the quarterback's throwing it forward doesn't make it not a running play.
I'm totally with you. Great stuff there, Joe. We're going to take a brief pause here. Then we're going to talk a little Raiders. Joe, what's interesting about this Raiders matchup, their interim head coach, Antonio Pierce, played under Coach Spagnuolo for 2 years. Coach Spag said how it's one of his favorite players and really praised him. You know, he was the middle linebacker on that team that memorably beat the 16-0 Patriots in the Super Bowl, where Spags had a great game plan to slow them down. Spags said they don't beat the Patriots without Pierce, who was really kind of the, you know, he was the middle linebacker. He was the quarterback of that defense. So that's something to watch. The Raiders have been, you know, the Raiders have been such a disaster much of this year. They've been much better under Pierce, which makes me think it's actually given a more competitive game than I first than I would have said, you know, a few weeks ago before he got the job. And I'm Joe, we got to talk about the two glaring statistics. Maybe this is a game where they can address these. No second half points for three straight games for the Chiefs offense, and they lead the NFL in NFL drops. Joe, how do you see this game shaking out? And do you think maybe this is a game where they can like improve on those numbers?
Well, yeah, they're going to have to give their receivers confidence, right? They're going to have to run routes, that high percentage routes, get those receivers catching the ball, control the line of scrimmage. Like, I think the Chiefs need to play a very methodical game here to build the confidence and the momentum going back after that tough loss. I think that's the number one thing. Looks like we've got to get back on track as far as trying to get this offensive line in tune with the snap count. We had a couple more of those started to rear their ugly heads again with Juwan Taylor, which didn't make, I'm sure, a lot of people happy. That seems to have reared its ugly head again. So I'm not concerned about it. Like, I'm not scared that it's going to be, you know, a problem, but they're going to have to fix that, right? Those are silly, silly penalties. And they're going to have to keep the momentum going. Like, they're going to have to put the pedal to the metal in the second half and not ease up on the Raiders. You know, even if they jump out to a big number, they're going to have to learn what it's like to come out of the locker room and at halftime and make adjustments and score points. I mean, you know, this could be a good confidence builder, you know, for this team. I mean, look, the Raiders aren't like horrible. I mean, I know their record doesn't show, you know, this isn't a Raiders team that, you know, can kill you, but, you know, bouncing around with quarterbacks. I mean, Josh Jacobs seems to really be the only, constant, he's not having the year. Cause Jeff, you know, you and I, when we first started doing this pod 3 years ago, like that Raiders game, he was always the X factor for me.
Yeah,
like
whenever they play the Raiders, he was point number one. Joe, I'm with you that I actually think, you know, I think the Chiefs win this. They're so good after a loss. I think they're all going to be super motivated. I'm kind of surprised that on Bet Online it's a 9-point line, which I actually think is pretty high. I think the Chiefs win this by like a touchdown. I actually think though that the Raiders cover the spread. That seems high. Glad you mentioned Juwan Taylor and kind of the offensive line. I think that's going to be the key issue, maybe the key matchup or something to watch for. Max Crosby has always been really good. He's having his best year. And we saw during the Netflix quarterback show how he and Patrick kind of have a thing. I think that's going to be something to watch and a fun matchup. And I think that's the matchup to watch. I think Chiefs will have to their advantage is I was in Allegiant Stadium a few weeks ago, last month, and it's a great venue, really cool stadium, one of my favorites. Coach Taub actually said the same thing. That's one of his favorites, how just pretty and sleek. It does look like the Death Star when you're walking around inside. You feel like that. They're even playing Star Wars music. Anyhow, I think one of the things that will help is it's always like this, but it's Thanksgiving week. I think you're going to have a lot of Chiefs fans in there. So for Max Crosby going against that offensive line, I don't think he's necessarily going to get the benefit of the crowd noise like the Chiefs had on Monday night. I think I think there's going to be as many, if not more, Chiefs fans and Raiders fans in that stadium.
Yeah, especially the way that the Raiders are playing. And one thing, speaking of Max Crosby, that we're going to be missing, we're trading college matchups. So we're going to be losing the Andrew Wiley, Max Crosby, you know, best buds in college, teammates thing, which is kind of it was hard because I know you and I always like talking about that. That was a fun one. However,
fun matchup. Yeah,
we do have now. They're not going to be going against each other because they both play offense. But speaking of Penn Quakers and Justin Watson, we've got 12-year veteran right guard Greg Van Roten, Penn Quaker, out there for the Raiders. So we'll have a couple of Penn Quakers out there in Vegas playing against each other, which is pretty cool. So keep your eye on Greg Van Roten for the Raiders on the offensive line. He's a solid veteran, came out of Penn and played for a couple different teams, and was a good pickup for them. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, look, you got Aiden O'Connell in at quarterback, right? They've started all three of their quarterbacks this year, even Brian Hoyer, you know, led the team in one game. And, we'll see what Aiden O'Connell can do. I mean, he's relatively, you know, young player here. I mean, he's a little bit older. He's 25-year-old, you know, rookie, but, fourth round pick. I mean, not a player that, you know, was, you know, super high on people's radar and things, and see what he can do. And that's, you know, this is a tough defensive line to play against, especially when you watch what the Chiefs were able to do against the Eagles offensive line, right, who, you know, right, pound for pound, like the Eagles and Chiefs offensive lines, you know, people call them the two best offensive lines in the NFL. And the Chiefs were able to really get Spags was getting dialing out some fantastic blitzes. They were running some great stunts and really giving the Eagles offensive line fit. So I can't imagine what they're going to be able to do against a guy like Aiden O'Connell, with all due respect to, you know, a rookie quarterback who wasn't played at Purdue. He still played some great college football, but he's probably hasn't seen anything like what he's about to see as Spags unleashes the exotic blitzes and things that he has. So that's going to be interesting. And so I think watching what this Raiders line can do against the Chiefs defensive line is first and foremost to see, you know, where things go. And then I think, I still, even though he isn't having the season, the one thing that does scare me just a tad about our defense, keep it on the defensive side of the ball for the Chiefs, is if Josh Jacobs does have a breakout game and they can control the clock. Like you said, if you think this is going to be a touchdown game and the 9-point line is too big, like if he could be the difference maker, right? I mean, we saw what DeAndre Swift did against the Chiefs and making those big plays at the right time. Josh Jacobs still got some stuff left in those legs. So that's what I'd be watching for more. And then again, on the other side of the ball is getting this receiving core some confidence and making the catches that they need to make. I mean, it's going to be a big test for them coming off of that tough loss against the Eagles.
And they hopefully can do this. It's not a very good secondary. Chiefs fans who might have not have watched the Raiders a lot, they'll see a familiar face. Marcus Peters, the former Chief, had some great years with the Chiefs, is one of their starters. And, you know, he was a really good player in his prime, but he's had several injuries. He's a far cry from what he used to be. Joe, how do you see this game shaking out? It's kind of score-wise. Are you like me that you think the nine-point spread is a little high? Do you see this about a touchdown game, or do you think the Chiefs cover?
I think the Chiefs cover this one, Jeff. I think they're going to win by at least 10. I think they're going to get their sea legs. And if I had to throw a score out there, I still think the Raiders are capable of scoring. And I'm not sure if the Chiefs are going to score in the 30s, but I would say to me, this game's going to be like a 2-touchdown game. Like it's going to be like 21-14. I think it's going to be slow for the Raiders. I don't think they have the offensive juice this go around to really take advantage of anything that the Chiefs defense is going to give them. So I'm seeing it like a 2-score, 2-touchdown game, you know, 28-14. Not like, I don't think it's going to be, listen, I like it to as a Chiefs fan, I would like to see it be 35-0. Right. But in all reality, I think it's going to be like a steady game for the Chiefs, you know, methodical. I think 28-14 is where I see this happening.
And again, a fun matchup between Antonio Pierce and Coach Spags. You wonder if Pierce knows anything that you know, any of the tricks. Coach Spags have been doing such an unbelievable job this year with this defense, but maybe Pierce, you know, knows some stuff. And I encourage you, I actually wrote about this connection between them for Forbes.com. I encourage listeners to check that out. Well, listen, happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. And if you enjoy this show presented by Bet Online, please subscribe. We're available on your favorite directories, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Luminary, and TuneIn. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Go Chiefs!